You're listening to Rust Belt Running.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You ran that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at Wheels Up in CLE, joined as I always am by Andrew Hettinger. You can find him in social media at Andrew Runs a Lot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running. Andrew, how you doing?
Ah, man, I am fantastic. You know, we've tried for years to get Steve Magnus to come on our podcast and,
we really have.
And talk with us. And, he still hasn't come on. But we're going to be discussing his newest book over the next, for a while. His book, Do Hard Things. We're going to do a deep dive on it. Kind of relate it to our own experiences, things that we've seen in our own running lives, and also now in what is now coaching experience for us, and just things we've seen in the community, and try to kind of relate it to those who listen to us a little bit as best we can, because Steve relates it to everyone very well, so there's not a whole lot to talk about besides just say read his book, but we want to do what we can to process it. So yeah. But I'm doing pretty sweet, man. I'm bummed that summer is ending.
Where did it go?
I don't know. All you motherfuckers wishing it away is where it went.
Whoa. I didn't wish summer away. I just wished the 90-degree, 80% humidity days away. There is a difference. Yesterday was great. We're recording this on Sunday the 28th, and yesterday it was like 80. The humidity was like 49%. Perfect. Give me that.
It was a nice running. It was nice running weather in the morning.
Yeah.
Set out early for 18, and it was it was nice. That's the first time I ran 18 miles since the second week of March 2020.
Oh, the famed training run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one where I ended going, I am absolutely going to PR at Glass City, 100%. Nothing can stop me.
Except.
And, I think I ran one more time over the next couple of months. So hopefully nothing like that happens again. I'm not really on social media or follow the news much anymore, so I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on. I know this monkeypox thing is for real, but I don't think that's going to stop us, right?
No, nobody's going to stop.
Unless we all start having sex with one another. I don't think it's... Isn't it an STD?
No.
Ish?
It can be spread that way, but there's other ways that it can be spread too.
Well, damn.
And I think cases are starting to go down. Yeah, no, it's kind of funny. That whole thing is going on, and just after 2 years of dealing with COVID, it's just kind of like this, whatever.
Oh, my God.
That's not my attitude towards it. It's just the general public's like, yeah, no, we can't be bothered.
I'm on the CDC's website, monkeypox symptoms. People with monkeypox get a rash that may be located on or near their genitals, penis, testicles, labia, or in vagina, or anus. And they literally put in parentheses, butthole.
Who knew that this episode was going to start this way? You and I literally did not discuss monkeypox once in our, like, lead up to the show. I was going to talk about how it's good that you have not been on social media because the Browns played a preseason game last night and the fans are in midseason form with their freakouts. But it was a game. It was a primetime game, which means Akron's own little Sebastian made the trek up to Cleveland.
Yes. Yes.
And you know what? You were like, it just confirmed for me what you said a couple weeks ago. I saw more people posting photos on Instagram. Like, oh, look, it's the blimp. The blimp's going downtown. It's like, it's a blimp. It's a blimp. It takes aerial coverage of the game. Like, I don't get it, but people here go nuts for it.
Great job diverting me off of the CDC's use of the word butthole.
100% trying to shift this conversation.
I was on 71 for work the other day, and when I got on 76 to head back to Akron, I could see the blimp off in the distance, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to get this photo, because I knew the caption that was coming with it, and I raced in my truck and I saw it, and I don't know, there must have been something going on at Firestone or something, because I saw it every day this week. I got a picture with the and captioned it on our story, "Your 5,000 candles in the wind," and yeah, I was pretty proud of that. But like, I could have gotten a ticket for sure, just for clout.
I care so much about this, guys, that I got a $200 ticket just for you.
Right.
You know what I will say is that I don't necessarily like summer ending, although I do love fall. But you have to have summer come to an end to get Ohio State football mm-hmm. back. Yeah. And we are, as of this recording, we are 6 days away from the Ohio State opener, and God, do I need that back so very badly.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
I'm too. And even though
I feel like not being on social media, it's weird though, because I haven't really had I haven't gotten like all the hype videos and stuff like that that you usually start seeing this time of year. I've seen a few things here and there.
Yeah.
You know, get some athletic articles or something that I can read, but there's mm-hmm. you know, not like a whole lot. I mean, I get on Instagram, but there's. It's not the same.
No.
We're gonna murder a lot of teams.
There's a lot of talk about defense.
That's been
making the rounds on social.
I haven't seen a good Ohio State defense since a long time ago. And
13 maybe? 2013? 14 was really good. The championship defense was legit. The Luke Fickell, Chris Ash defense. I mean, because those were the Bosa.
That defense peaked at the right time.
Yes,
that's what that was.
Yeah,
you know, but just a defense that you know at the beginning of the season and meets expectation. You know, at the beginning of the season they're going to be elite and they meet expectations. I haven't seen a defense like that at Ohio State since Tressel for sure. And it might have been years before Tressel even left. I don't remember the last time I saw a real legit Ohio State defense. So I'd love to see that coupled with that offense that is just, I mean, loaded. And it does kind of suck because if we meet expectations, it's going to feel a little bit like Cavs-Warriors, where it's like everything is just window dressing till we play Alabama in the national championship, which kind of sucks, but
Alabama's not making the national championship, Andrew.
No, I'm not talking about Desmond Howard. He doesn't.
No. I agree, but I did see the best meme yesterday, which was something like, it was like, these memes ain't shit. And then 15 minutes later, and it was just the picture of Desmond Howard's playoff prediction. I still don't know what I'm more surprised by. Like, after the Texas A&M prediction, which is legit, anybody that wins the SEC is obviously going to the playoffs. But I don't know if I'm more blown away by the Baylor pick, the Pittsburgh pick, or the Michigan pick. Michigan's obvious because it's Desmond.
He's just trying to be a topic of conversation. That's why I don't want to give him that floor. I mean, he used to be fun. I used to like him, but now he's just trying for shock factor, and it's like, No, that's stupid. Like, you made your dumbass comment in December. I don't need to hear from you again making more dumbass comments. Like,
I had forgotten about that.
Just go dig a hole, sit in it, and cover yourself up. Like, I don't need to hear from you again, Desmond. I really don't. Like, one of the greatest college football players to ever play the game.
Yes.
And I just don't want to hear from him.
Yeah.
Like, it's asinine comments. You're making stupid – you're supposed to be some type of journalist, and you're making predictions that aren't rooted in any kind of reality. You cannot pick Pitt to go to the playoff. I mean, you can't and be reputable. I mean, I'm sorry. They lost all their top players.
I know.
like,
what is an ACC team outside of, like, Florida State when they had Jameis Winston, or Clemson, like, 5 years ago, like,
dude,
done anything?
There's not even going to be an ACC team that has less than three losses.
Yeah.
Like, because they're just going to, because they're all middling, and they're going to eat each other up a little bit. And that's what's going to happen. And Wake Forest to win the ACC at 9-3. Whoop-de-fucking-do. Like, and Texas A&M, they don't even know who their quarterback is.
Like, Michigan doesn't know who their quarterback is either.
No. Michigan didn't know who their head coach was until, like, February. Like,
Harbaugh put out a statement yesterday. He's going to start one guy in week two, and then in week three, he's like, we'll figure it out for week three. Like, yes, thank you. Well, Ohio State has C.J. Stroud, who's probably going to be the first overall pick in the NFL draft next year. You are doing the Romeo Crennel coin flip. Oh, my God.
I know what'll galvanize this team. I know what'll galvanize this team. More minutes for two quarterbacks. Let's go. Like, yeah, there you go. That can't end poorly.
Oh.
Ask Jim Tressel how that worked out.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
When he did the whole Cardale Jones-Braxton Miller experiment.
It didn't work out well. JT Barrett. The Braxton Miller.
I'm sorry, not Braxton. Yeah, JT Barrett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's nuts.
It's back. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I'm
you said
I'm
you were
going
to talk about it, and you got going.
I'm excited to see. Well, you barely brought up the Desmond Howard thing, and I just can't. I said don't talk about it, but fuck him.
No, you are right, though. Like, at the time when I sent you that picture and you responded, this can't be real, like, I hadn't watched it because I was watching soccer. So I did a quick Google search, and you're dead right. There had to be 30 articles that had already popped up. They were all the same version of, like, look at what Desmond Howard said. It's like, you're right. Everybody was talking about it yesterday. And I guess, like, it's probably boring to make the same predictions, which is that right now it's Alabama, it's Ohio State, Texas A&M is obviously in that, getting close to that tier. Georgia's in that tier. It's got to be really freaking boring to say the same thing every year, but for the last probably like 5 or 6 years, it's been fairly true. And then, you know, like, Oklahoma or Clemson slides in there. Maybe USC now with Lincoln Riley being there, but
not yet.
Probably not.
Yeah, you have your three, and then you pick somebody else. Yeah, pick Baylor. I don't give a shit. Pick Baylor at four.
Yeah, sure,
that doesn't bother me. Like, yeah, whatever. Like, they're a good team. Pick Iowa State. I don't care. Like,
Whoever's
a sleeper, that's fine. A broken clock is right twice a day. Maybe this is the time you're right picking, that sleeper team. And you're picking a sleeper, not saying, yes, they're going to get there, but this is somebody to look out for. But you can't have four of them. That's the bracket I would have picked for my NCAA tournament brackets when I was like 11.
That's the one of those, like, you're trying to win a parlay where it's like the parlay is going to pay out 2,000 to 1, and you're like, I'll put $20 on that. Sure, 100%. What can I lose? Oh God, I can't wait. I love it because I leave. I was going to say, I leave on vacation this upcoming week, so we check into the house on Saturday, and then it is a prime time game against Notre Dame with a pissed off Ohio State team.
I hope we're God, pissed off. What's the what's
they're
the
pissed off. I don't know. And Notre Dame keeps chirping. God, I love it.
Yeah, it's
17.
Whew. Okay.
Ohio State minus 17.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's yeah, I assume we're gonna just obliterate them. I did like reading an athletic article. Well, this turned into a college football preview.
It's okay.
I did like reading an article about Ryan Day and how he understands this is kind of a put up or shut up season. Like he knows. Like
yes.
I think the what he said was the honeymoon is over, and it's like good. I'm glad you realized that, and that you're kind of, I don't want to say you're on the hot seat, but you can get yourself there. Like he feels that he knows that his job is not 100% secure just because he's here and went. Like you took a job where you're expected to bring home national championships, and you need to do it. And you can't have these slip ups like we had against Michigan last year. You can't tell me we should have lost to that team. And I mean, eventually we were going to lose to them. I get it, but
no, I'll say last year's team should have, because that defense was that bad.
That defense was pretty atrocious, but that's on him. Like, so,
yeah.
You know, he has to get that defense trending in the right direction to match the offense. I mean, golly, that offense is ridiculous. But yeah. Are we going to be Oklahoma part two, or are we going to be able to? Are we going to be on the tier with Alabama and actually able to compete with them?
Right.
And I mean, those are the two options that we're heading towards one of them. And Oklahoma part two does not sound like fun to me. I don't want to do that.
No, I've heard their quarterbacks aren't very good either. I had to I had to throw that in. The Brown season's going to be starting soon, and I need to beat the crap out of one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's. But let's not go into that. There's.
Oh no, I don't
care
about that.
We can do that later. That's a.
Nah.
There's
that's
a whole
fine.
Lot to talk about with that.
Nah.
So, we talked a little bit about Texas A&M. I think we're going to talk a little more
segue.
About Texas A&M here. So yeah, we want to talk about the book "Do Hard Things" by Steve Magnus. You know, Adam's a huge fanboy of his.
We both are.
You more so than I mean I am too, but not to your level. I mean, that's a compliment.
I'll take it. We've always touted ourselves as fans of Brad and Steve. So
oh, absolutely, we are.
I didn't know there were tiers within this podcast of it.
I mean, you're on the Alabama tier. I'm on the Pitt tier.
I'll take it. No, it's a really, really good book because I think right now you're kind of almost seeing this idea of toughness almost kind of be like the separator between kind of like a couple of different cultures within the country. This kind of like old school style of toughness of like just always acting like you're tough, you're not scared, like we're just going to power through these things. And I think there's very much a space of people who have made like entire brands out of that. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's kind of what science is starting to show in terms of like how you actually power through really difficult things. And Steve's book is entirely devoted to, you know, looking at like, what does science say about how we power through and handle tough things? How do we handle when things aren't going well? You know, is the just put your head down, run through the wall model really something that holds up? Or is it antiquated and outdated and really something that might keep you from getting to where you want to go to? And I think it's a really good book. And I love that he starts the whole book out by really kind of deconstructing that old, you know, I guess I'll call it the old school style of toughness. And you talked about Texas A&M, and he uses a story from Texas A&M and the beginning of Bear Bryant's tenure as a coach. And if you're not familiar with Bear Bryant, he's like the legendary Alabama coach. He turned Alabama into the powerhouse that they were back in the 70s. And until Nick Saban got to Alabama,
he coached
like Bear
Forrest
Bryant
Gump.
Was, He did coach Forrest Gump, yeah. Mm-hmm. He might be stupid, but boy, can he run.
He discovered Forrest Gump. Does that movie even happen without Bear Bryant?
It's been probably 10 years since I saw that movie. I'm trying to think, like, how did that happen in that scene? Oh, yeah, that's right. Forrest is just running through the stadium, and all those coaches stand up and are like, what the hell?
I'm sorry.
No, it's good. Anytime we can drop in a Forrest Gump reference is fine by me. No, but so, like, the legend of Bear Bryant begins with him taking a job at Texas A&M. And the team was really, really bad, and so Bear Bryant gets in there, and he's going to go out, and he's going to take these guys to this little town called Junction, Texas, and he's just going to spend a couple of weeks just beating the crap out of them, just running them until they puke. He's gonna separate out the weak from the strong. And the way the legend goes is he does it, and the team goes out, and a couple years later, they win a national championship. Boom, look, this is awesome. Look at how I destroyed these guys, and I weeded out the weak, and I found the tough people. Except it really didn't play out that way. And Steve goes in and talks about this. One is that the reason they won the national championship is because it turns out that Bear Bryant was, you know, able to do what a lot of coaches at that time did, paid for better recruits. He got better recruits in there, and they won. The year that he did all this, the team went 1-9. So after he beat up this team and supposedly separated out the weak, the team still lost a ton of games the way they had been. And then three, and I think this is kind of the key that Steve really wants to point out, is that if you look at the players that quit the team, a lot of them went on to have incredible success doing very difficult things. They were All-Americans in baseball, All-Americans in basketball. One of the guys that quit ended up being a fighter pilot who was selected by the Air Force to be part of this top-secret program flying captured Russian-made MiGs. Like, these are people who were successful doing very tough things. And if your whole concept around toughness is that you do something and you weed out the weak and they go on and they just are weak people that don't ever have success, the story of the Junction Boys disproves it. And so Steve really uses that as sort of the baseline for discussing, like, this is why I think this outmoded style of toughness is bad and needs to be kind of picked apart. And, you know, you talk about football going on right now, college football just started. You'd brought up Scott Frost. You'd sent me an article or a tweet about Scott Frost, who's the head coach of the Nebraska football team. And Andrew, I think this is good for you to kind of share, like, what Scott Frost was talking about, because his team laid an egg yesterday.
Yeah. So Scott Frost, the head coach of Nebraska, who everybody thought he was the guy who was going to bring Nebraska back. And he has been extended grace that you do not see at that level of program, because they've not been good. And they keep bringing him back, which I commend. I think continuity is good. I thought it was good when the Browns brought Hugh Jackson back. I'm sorry. And I was,
it's okay.
I can admit I was wrong.
That's all right. We'll move past it.
But, Scott Frost, he had a comment on a radio show a couple weeks back where he said that his offensive linemen were vomiting 15 to 20 times per practice under his new offensive line coach's watch. It's not because they're not in shape. He's just working them hard, Frost said on Huskers Radio Network. I think they love it. He's kind of freed them up to be aggressive, and I love the way they're coming off the ball. Now, to be clear, I do not think his offensive linemen were actually vomiting 15 to 20 times per practice. But if you're pushing your players or your athletes hard enough to where they're vomiting at all, you probably have an issue. Because again, that's fake toughness. So yes, they lost to Northwestern in Dublin, Ireland yesterday, which I don't understand why football is still trying to make Europe happen. But Kurt Anderson, who's an offensive lineman from Northwestern, had a great tweet yesterday. And to think, we only puked four times all camp. So yeah, I think, you know, we and that kid's way smarter than anybody at Nebraska, so I'll go with him. But to think that we're still in this, you know, water makes you weak. Like, as good of a movie as Remember the Titans is, Coach yes. Boone is an asshole.
Yes.
Like, everything he does is wrong. And besides, like, you know, calling out racism, that's the one thing I can really get behind Coach Boone on. But he, you know, he was a terrible coach running his players the way he did. And, you know, we glorified that in that movie, which that movie is amazing. It really is. But it's not a way to live or, you know, those are not practices that we should have in, you know, our running life and our daily life and how we treat ourselves and how we, you know, approach things mentally. Because, yeah, pushing yourself to that point is it's not healthy, and it doesn't do good. It makes things harder. You know, if we want to relate it into running, I've talked a lot about how I wanted to fuel more properly when we, this summer. And I carry and do fuel, except yesterday I forgot my gels. That sucked.
For 18 miles?
Yeah. Ooh. Fortunately, my buddy Nate Perez came up clutch with a pack of Honey Stinger chews. So I was able to ration those out.
Good job,
and
Nate.
Make it work. Yeah, clutch. But, you know, there used to be almost this, like, machismo around, you know, I can run 16 miles without caring. I've been there. I was that guy at one point. And that's not a banner to wave proudly. Like, that shows I do stupid things and I like to make my workouts harder than they need to and less quality than they could be. Like, that's what you're saying in that moment. I'd rather have high quality workouts. And, you know, so that Scott Frost, Coach Boone way of doing things, that's the Bear Bryant way. The Steve Sarkisian way that you're going to talk about.
Yeah, and it's really just along the same lines as the Scott Frost. Steve Sarkisian's the head coach of the Texas Longhorns football program. Again, a story
program. Why they hired him, I don't understand.
Because he was Alabama's offensive coordinator. I mean, I guess there's worse reasons to hire somebody. But he ran a scrimmage sometime in early August, late July, where the temperatures hit triple digits. And, of course, in Texas that happens a lot. But the temperature's at triple digits, and he kept just running play after play after play. I think he said we tallied hundreds of plays in triple-digit heat, and he explained it by saying, that's the game. Well, he lost five guys to injury, multiple of them starters, you know, to like, the season for injury. And, you know, scientifically, we know why this happens. You know, we know that if you train in the heat and you get dehydrated and you start to get tired, you put yourself in a position to possibly get injured. It's why, like, when we run, you monitor for things, for signs of overtraining, you know, elevated heart rate, poor sleep, things like that. Because if you keep running hard with those symptoms, you put yourself at risk for injury. And the whole point of running or of playing football is to be able to actually compete in the contest, to play the game, to race the race. And so it's not the game to put yourself or to put your players into a physical position where they are at an elevated risk for injury. And again, it's this idea like, well, we're going to weed out the weak. This is the game. It's not the game. The game is that when you're playing an actual game, you have a lot of downtime in football. There's a lot of time to rest, time off in between plays, and the guys typically are doing these not on those incredibly hot days. It's why football happens more in the fall. And you rotate in a lot of guys. You don't play hundreds of plays in a football game in a day. You play maybe 50 to 60 plays a game. I think when Chris Gamble was playing for Ohio State, he played both ways. I think once he tallied up like 100 plays, but that was like one game. You monitor all the stuff so the guys don't get hurt. And putting your players in a position to do that, it might sound like it's being really tough, but he lost five guys. And he gave an interview afterward, goes, I feel really bad. Some of these guys were... they're in a position to really, you know, make a name for themselves this year. It's your fault that they're not.
Right.
But it's, you know, to kind of like extrapolate it into running, it's going out there when you're hurt and running 16 miles at race pace and then being surprised when you get hurt. Like, there's nothing tough about that. Like, the whole goal is to get to the race, not to prove how tough you are in training. And it's... Steve talks a lot about how when it comes to toughness, you need to have tools in the toolbox. And there are times when having that sort of like grinded out, push myself a little bit further than I might typically push myself tool in your belt is a good idea to have. You know, you and I have talked about how we're not a huge fan of David Goggins, not because his message is necessarily bad, but because the way he portrays that message is as if that's the only way to approach every single endeavor that you go on. Right. And it can help you at times, but it can also pull you back at times. And it's because you can't treat every situation with just one tool. There's different ways to manage different situations. And, you know, it really comes from the idea of the Navy SEALs. And Steve talks about the Navy SEALs in his book and about how people look at Hell Week, you know, that famed week that really separates out who's going to become a Navy SEAL, is like the end all be all. Like, look at what they're doing. Like, this is clearly the way to figure out who's tough. It's the way to figure out who can actually make it as a Navy SEAL. And then he talks about how when Navy SEALs actually then become SEALs, their training is a lot of classroom time. It's a lot of intense studying and drill and just repeated practice. Not in sleep-deprived conditions, but in the sort of conditions that the average college student would have. Because they need to know their material. They need to know what their objective is. They need to know how to execute that objective. And you don't do it by just like, we're tough Navy SEALs, we're just going to go out there and improvise. They practice. They master what they need to do. But people have taken Hell Week as the example of toughness when really it's just a way to sort out who can become a SEAL. And then after that, they execute the way that you and I would with running, repeated practice, pushing the boundaries just a little bit.
Toughness is cool, but toughness without mastery doesn't mean anything. Like, you can't just, you know, there was a dude I used to work with who, was always, you know, always talking a big game about everything. And he kept challenging me to races. And, I was like, okay, race me home one day. He's like, how far is that? I was like, 8 miles. He's like, I can do that. I'm like, no, you can't. We never did, but there's not a chance in hell. He couldn't have completed it. He maybe could have like beat me in like a 400 meter race. You know, where you can gut that out. You can gut out, you know, a minute 10 seconds. You can gut. He still wouldn't beat me. But you can't just out tough me in an hour long run. Like, that's not going to happen. And you have to have mastery of it. I like that you kind of brought that up with like the studying. And I think, you know, as we've kind of done some of this run coaching, you know, we're trying to help people master things. We want to build some toughness. Yeah. I mean, you have notes in all the workouts about like some of the runs are kind of geared towards that. And, you know, I do a slow 10-mile run on Mondays, which is, you know, 48 hours after I did, my long workout. And those miles hurt. And there's a reason I put them there. Like, they're the hardest miles of the week. But I like that I have 10 miles that really feel like close to the end of a marathon. I mean, I feel like I'm in it, even though it's an easy run. And, you know, that I am trying to develop that toughness. But yeah, to have toughness without mastery it's fruitless.
Well, and like thinking about those 10 miles and, you know, talking about mastery, those 10 miles may be at the beginning of a training cycle after you've taken a month or two off from the last year. Those 10 miles are going to feel difficult, even with experience, because if you haven't subjected your body to that in a while, your body's like, whoa, wait a minute, what is this? Right. We haven't done this in a while. And maybe after 5 miles, your body's like, okay, I'm kind of bored. Do we have to keep doing this? Like, let's slow down. Let's go home. Like, we really can go back to the couch. And there's a huge difference there between maybe that same run 3 months later, even doing it after a 16-mile run, where it's like your body's like, yeah, we've done this. We're good. Like, yeah, it hurts. I'm tired, but I'm so used to this. We've been doing it consistently for 3 or 4 months that this isn't bad anymore. And you're not going to get that same sort of internal objection that you might have gotten when you were doing it at the outset. And that's because of mastery. That's because of that repeated application.
I still get that. but in a good way. I mean, you have to train yourself to get through that. So, like, I mean, I still fight the boredom. I fight, like, because those are the worst. Like, a couple weeks ago, it was like 9-minute miles, which, you know, for you and me, that's slogging. And I couldn't have gone faster. That was what I had that day. And that was after Goodyear. And it was crazy. I literally, and this was a total accident. I ran the exact same time as for that 10 miler that I did for the half 2 days before, to the second. They were both 1:30:28.
Oh, that's awesome.
To like do that, yeah, I'm bored. I'm tired. It's taking forever. The perception of time is off. Like, I just went from, 6:52 miles to 9 minute miles. So when I got 2 miles to go, I'm like, no, this should be 13 minutes, not 19 or 18 or whatever.
Yeah.
And, everything's off. And, but to have to fight through that a little bit, I do get to train myself. And that's kind of what I would tell myself when it really hurt. I'm like, get used to this. Like, remember this feeling, and you're getting through it. It's not ideal, and I hope I can get through it a little faster than that on October 16th. But, it's still getting through that, developing that toughness. It's a requirement. So when we say some of these things aren't good and we do crap on David Goggins a lot, yeah, you do have to develop it. Like, we don't want to, there's a line. And I think that's one theme through all of Steve's book, is he doesn't want to be on the extreme of either side. The correct answer is always in the middle, which is that way with pretty much everything in life. The correct answer is going to always kind of be in the middle. But the correct answer certainly isn't on the side of the extreme toughness development, like some people think, and like our parents went through, and the generations before us, which we see some of the same thing with this student loan crap right now. It's like, I went through it. I saved up for years so my kids could go to school. Great.
Man, that's a rabbit hole that I could go down, and
I'm sure you could.
Yeah, because I mean it directly affects me, and I'm grateful for it, and that's pretty much all I want to go into with that. You talked about how you talked about how he doesn't like being on the extreme on either side of things. I talked about how he talks about having, you got to have a lot of different tools in the toolbox. There's one kind of authoritarian, old school style toughness example from a coaching standpoint that is probably led to one of the greatest sports moments in history. And that's Herb Brooks as the coach of the U.S. hockey team in 1980. Mm-hmm. He coached with that very authoritarian, or at least he coached that team with that very authoritarian, old school tough style, and it was apparently very different from how he had coached at previous stops, because he'd been a college coach at I believe the University of Minnesota, but there was a method to his madness. One was that he didn't have these guys for multiple years; he had them for I think 8 months, so he had to get all these guys from different regions of the country all on the same page in 8 months, ready to compete, from an aerobic standpoint with the Russians, who were the best conditioned team in the world. And one of the reasons why he chose that sort of authoritarian style that he did was hockey at the time was very regional, kind of like your upper Midwest region, your New England region, and there was a lot of bad blood there because all these guys had played against each other in college. And so Brooks's idea was, if I get them to hate me, they'll stop hating each other. And so he did that, but it created this space between him and his players that he hadn't previously had with teams, and it ended up working. And you got one of the best sports moments in history out of it. But something Steve talks about is that there's times to be very tough on yourself, but it's not sustainable to do in the long term. And so a coach that maybe has that style now, where maybe it's professional and these players can eventually sign free agent contracts and go somewhere else, they're going to bolt because that style's not necessarily sustainable, especially if you're not having any sort of success with it. Herb Brooks did it for 8 months. 8 very hard months, but then you get to go and do your own thing. So that was a tool that he was able to use, and it worked out. But, you and I have talked about Goggins before and about how we don't like that mentality, because if you keep pushing and pushing and pushing, eventually success isn't sustainable. And we've talked about how he has crapped out on races where, if he had just taken some rest, he probably would have been okay. He's been beaten by people who took naps on the course, people who stepped off at an aid station and just chilled out for a bit to kind of mentally and physically regain composure. And they've beaten him at times when he's just like, push through, push through, push through. That's the only thing you can do. It's clearly a mantra that's worked for him. You know, it's how he became a SEAL. It's how he overcame a very tough life. But we've also seen where it doesn't work for him. And he just, he kind of comes at things with that one tool in the toolbox. And, you know, it's never that we like to crap on him. It's just that we feel like his approach just lacks the nuance that you talked about. That it's kind of extreme on one end, and therefore he doesn't really look at all the other things that you can use that might eventually help you power through if that one tool doesn't work.
Well, what's funny is I think he has more tools. Because, like, so we have friends who do subscribe to him a little more than a lot of people do and, like, read his books and stuff. And I think there is more nuance to him. But the persona that he's developed, and this is one of the issues with social media, is the Joe Rogans of the world, these gurus, so to speak, they find their niche and they lean into it.
Yeah.
And David Goggins has found his niche of being this tough, stay hard guy, when that's really not all who he is. But that's the only way he perceives himself. That's the only mentality he shows anymore, because that's what makes him the most money.
Right.
And it's just like Joe Rogan used to be, like, you know, just kind of this quirky, fun pothead, sometimes poignant, but just like exploring everything type of guy.
Yeah.
And now he's become this more conspiratorial, right wing loon box, over the last couple of years, because it's making him money and it's getting him, you know, traction, and it's working for him. So he's leaning into it. And I mean, he has a freaking documentary going on Fox Nation, which is like the even further right wing Fox News. Like, he's totally just letting it go. And this is who he is now. And it's like, that's not, he used to be a Bernie Sanders dude and he just loves to smoke a lot of weed. Like, cool. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just crazy to see this happen with, you know, people who don't need to lean into that. You know, you've had your success, and yeah. It's not really relevant.
It's funny
what we're talking about.
I know, I think it is, cuz you and I got together earlier, well, about a week ago now, just to kind of like talk about where the business is at and start thinking about, like, how do we try to grow this, trying to bring in people for the spring training cycle. And you specifically said, like, there's probably some things that we need to do that we maybe don't like doing or aren't very good at. And it wasn't like, you know, finding that niche and just like leaning into it, but it was basically like, you know, putting ourselves out there more, having a bigger social media presence, you know, recognizing that we're gonna have to do some teaching with things. And, you know, you and I are more experienced runners, and a lot of the runners we're working with tend to be more experienced runners. So we're not starting from square one with a lot of people. We have to kind of do some things that would be, I guess, a way of like bringing in a broader base of clients. And it's funny because, like you said, like these are approaches that make people money. And like, as you and I, who want to eventually be doing this and making money, like, I get it. Like, who wouldn't want to make money? Who wouldn't want to find that thing where you go, this is great. I found my niche. I can make money doing it. It's a brand. It's different from what everybody else is doing. Awesome. And at the same time, like with running, there's only so many ways to skin a cat. Like, running is largely, you know, it's running 80% of your stuff pretty easy, running 20% of your stuff hard. There's maybe some nuance in how you handle that 20%, but, you know, what you and I do can't be like totally different, because this is a formula that tends to work. It produces results, and we just have to figure out a way to do it in such a way that, like, people just know.
Even the nuance is the same. Like, that's the funny thing. Like, I mean, I look at some speed workouts and I'm like, this is too complex. Like, just run intervals.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to get crazy, and people just get too cute. And it's like, you love the hill workout with the sock. And I haven't done
it. Oh, yeah, the guardrail.
I've never done that. And I should. It's interesting. But I think that's what you end up doing. Like, you end up just – let's just create workouts that are interesting. You could just do hill sprints at just a prescribed time or distance, and it's going to be the same workout. But
pretty much, yeah.
You know, And so, like, even the new – because I've kind of battled with that a little bit as we've been prescribing workouts for people. I'm like, man, this just all kind of feels the same. And, we you know, we've even gotten some of the feedback, some of that feedback in some of our recaps that, you know, this is pretty similar to, you know, training I've done with coaches in the past. Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, so we're doing something that works because those coaches are very successful. So,
yes.
But, yeah, it's – you know, we're developing accountability. And, you know, trying to develop, I think, a positive mindset around running. I think that's really what it comes down to in coaching. And that's where this book for us comes in so handy. And, you know, we try to empower. Like, we had an athlete this week or last week message us saying, hey, I got a friend coming in. Can I move this and that? And it's like, you have total autonomy to do that. Like, if we're moving workouts every week, we need to figure out the better schedule. But
yeah,
you don't have to ask us to move something. Like,
life happens.
Man, just freaking do it. Just maybe let us know. But don't ask me. You have the autonomy to do that. You have the autonomy to go, I can't do speed today. I'm just going to go out and run easy. Do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you and I, our job is, you talked about providing accountability. It's, I think, providing some perspective, you know, in terms of, you know, how these workouts all fit together and, you know, where you can go with them if life gets in the way. You know, it's really about just keeping people kind of on track with where they're at. It's funny to think about that. Like, you know, what you and I are doing is similar to what a lot of other coaches do. And I think you and I do it very well. And we very clearly have good rapport with our clients. We get a lot of great messaging on that. So we're doing a good job, you know, and it's like, it's funny to think about, okay, like, we just have to figure out a way to sell that to a bigger market of people. And we could do it by, like, finding that niche and just, like, leaning really hard into it. But I think what I appreciate about you and I is that we recognize the need for nuance. And I don't think either one of us would ever be attracted to that idea of, like, finding that niche and going hard and just dismissing everybody else is, like, totally wrong, because we just want what's best for our clients. And we know the best way to do that is to do what a lot of other coaches have already figured out. It's not super complicated if you know what you're doing and you've put the time into understanding what you're doing.
Yeah, this is good stuff. We got more to talk about with this book, and more to talk about with our great minds think alike. Just saw that as I was bringing this episode down, he texted me. You'll probably bring this episode down here. Dang right. We got plenty of good stuff to continue to talk about with this book and how it relates to you know, our training and other things moving forward. You have vacation coming up, which I'm semi jealous of. I mine's a couple months away, so
yeah.
being at the beach sounds way better than running 20 miles next week.
Yeah. Yes, it does. I was training hard for a marathon last year when I went on vacation. I'm not doing that now, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, you were, because you were going hard. You didn't pare it back that. Well, you couldn't. You were at a point where you really
That was could. Peak week. Or
yeah.
Week before peak week. Yeah, like, I was in the thick of it.
Yeah. This is gonna be a good home stretch, as we have some athletes who were chasing some big goals, hitting their workouts.
Yes.
And you know, and I feel like I'm doing pretty good. I had a little injury scare like last week, I think, and kind of messed up my weekend last weekend, but I'm good now. There's a lot of good stuff that we have to talk about, and we're going to keep using this book to go through it. I think it's good stuff.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
If Steve Magnus won't join us, we'll just talk about his book without him.
I still think we'll eventually get him on. Someday.
I'm not going to hold my breath.
That's fine. That's fair.
Because I will definitely die.
We don't have the reach of Rich Roll.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Only so much we can do.
I mean, the dude got Malcolm Gladwell to blurb his book. I'm just not sure that we're the size. We should get Malcolm Gladwell on.
He's a runner.
He is, I know, but can you imagine, like, probably the most influential author and speaker of this realm came on our... Dude, you have one job on vacation.
Just tons of emails.
Yep. Just keep sending them. Just schedule them. Okay, let's end this because I'm rambling now. All right, have fun on vacation.
I will. Thank you.
Everybody, be on the lookout. We're gonna be starting to ramp up for training starting in 2023. It's hard to believe we're already having to think about like getting ready for that. But with training close to winding down, we're gonna be near race month for Akron, and that means we're only just a couple weeks away from. Or after that, we're only a couple weeks away from Columbus. So things are starting to wind down, and we're going to be getting into, thinking about the spring. So keep us in mind. We look forward to that. I look forward to some time off from coaching. once that's all done and ramping up to bigger, better things. So it's all hard, and we're gonna stay hard and do hard things. And next time, everybody, go Buckeyes, fuck Desmond Howard, and enjoy your miles.
Yes, everybody.